Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. So I have this display here, and I want to start by saying that our fundamental practice in Zen, of course, is to breathe, is to lose yourself in the present moment, to find the present moment, to find present moment awareness, which involves losing your story, losing what you're thinking about. And, you know, as we know, it's not easy, but we set up a nice space here where you can, to some degree or another, lose all of your stories and just embark on, and just soak in the present moment, whatever that has to offer. And then we do that over and over again so that we're better at doing that when we leave as well. That's our primary practice. And we have this thing called the Dharma as well. It's not the only thing. That, I think of that as Buddha practice. And we also have this Dharma practice, which is learning about what that means and how to integrate it into your life and what the bigger story is that we're a part of. We just did this class on the Dharma of the old Dharma. What do we call it? The roots of Buddhism. The old stories about what this life is really about. So there is a story as well in Buddhism. There are stories that are important. And today I want to tell a story. I want to talk about this story of the ox herding pictures as a kind of big picture of what we're doing in this practice. Because though our primary practice is losing our story, we come back to a story, and it's good that we choose some good stories because they are important in guiding our practice. So I'm going to talk about stories today, and this story in particular. And this story is the story of a little boy who's lost his ox or his bull. I'll probably refer to it as bull just because that's what this is the way the text is translated in this translation. It's about a little boy who loses his bull and then finds him. And that's an analogy to our practice. And the practice in this is framed then as a story and as an adventure. And that's I think I have that in the title of this talk, an adventure. It's important to me that you see this practice as an adventure that has twists and turns and breakthroughs and failures, plenty of them. Dead ends, because that way you're going to be up for it. Like, and you have to be up for it because it's not always going to be pleasant, this journey. It's not just a kind of we ask that you know up front that there's going to be some twists and turns. There's going to be some parts where you have to hold on tight. And there's also other parts where you have to loosen your grip. And that's going to change the way you see difficulty, you see, I think. Every movie, every story, every great myth has a narrative arc. And I was going to say, Bernadette, and so you can just excuse yourself at any moment. But that's not true, because I dug it a little deeper, And really what I want to talk about today is just that arc, the more at a, from a higher level of, you know, from 30,000 feet. And that arc includes hardship and drama and transformation. I remember telling my kids, you know, because they didn't watch many movies, our kids, at all when they were younger. It's just too intense. And I remember, I think it was Ava, our daughter. No, I think it was her, maybe. Anyway, just telling her in the middle of this cartoon movie, this Norwegian cartoon movie about a boat, a little rescue boat guy, that, honey, don't worry, it's going to change. We're going to get through this together. Every movie has to have this. I don't know why that is, but it has to have this difficult part, and then it changes, okay? So let's just get through this. Stick with it. And of course, that's part of the reasons they have that, is to teach us to stick with it. You know, to give us some skills around, oh no, everything's a Walmart. Oh, okay. And so that's the there is a kind of arc to these things, from whether it's Theseus or Muhammad or Star Wars. And they point toward change, toward transformation. How do we change? So in this one, it's about from about 1,000 years ago. The pictures probably predate that. Elizabeth heard recently, that Elizabeth Fitter, that, you know, that it's an old Taoist story, and it'd be fun to find that old Taoist story, but probably is. But it was adapted now to Buddhism, and the Kakuin was the monk who wrote the verses for this story. You can look it up later and find those verses. I'm not going to read them. I'll just quote from them. And then every verse has a comment by his student, Gion, probably by Gion. So this first picture, here's the little, oh my gosh, I got the, already messed up. Here's the first picture, little boy. And he's looking around. He's lost. He's lost his bowl. And he doesn't even know where he is. In this first picture. So, and the verse says he's tired and exhausted from looking. And he's working hard. He's already working hard. It doesn't start with him, you know, on the couch. It starts with him already on the journey to find his bull, which is this true nature of his that he's lost. And in a little Shakespearean aside, in the verse, it says, Gion says, you know, the bull has never really been lost. It says right up in the front, the bull has never really been lost. It's just that our boy feels confused and alone because, and this is going to be a theme that I'm going to weave through this talk, because opposites are pulling at him. Here's the quote. Greed and fear, good and bad, entangle me. So he's being confused by these opposites. In particular, they mention here, good and bad, greed and fear. In the second picture, yay! He finds some footprints. There they are. And he's on the way. On the way. And in this one, the important thing is that he doesn't just see one set of... Once he sees one set of footprints, he sees them everywhere. He sees them under the grass, the lush grass, and in the deep mountains. He just can't stop seeing them once he's found them. Once he knows what they look like. And then... the next one is perceiving the bull. So here he actually sees the bull for the first time, sees his backside. And this, the verse for this, it doesn't really show it in this, but the verse for this, the birds are singing, The sun is warm, the breezes are mild, and he's just happy. He's just happy to have found the bowl. And it's a very relaxing scene. Everybody's happy. But it's not over, you see. So that could be the kind of art, that could be the narrative, you know, okay, yeah, hard at first, worried, lonely, and then he finds the bowl. That would be one maybe that Ava would like when she was 4 years old. But it's got to get harder. The second and the third one here are what's called in a narrative arc is the rising action. Now we get the climax really in the next two, in 4 and 5. So here he is. This one's called. What's this one called? Catching the bull. And the main thing about this is this bull pulls him everywhere, all over. It's a terrific struggle. The climax of the story is the point of maximum conflict, you know, where the protagonist alone has to do this thing, do this really hard thing. And I'm sure he thought about letting go of the rope, just forget about it. But he holds on tight. And here the bull, it can be a little confusing because the bull runs away. Does your true nature really run away from you? I don't know. I don't know about that. My interpretation of that has always been that your mind, if you continue your practice and really try to find deeply that true nature, you will feel like it keeps disappearing. And what this is for me is the kickback from the self. It is difficult to hold on to it. And part of that for me, I'm sure, is just because the self does not want this. It is anathema to everything it's learned. I'm the boss around here. I'm not going to just give up give over the ship to somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. I got to stay in control. And so there is this struggle to really, really lose it after an initial, wonderful. Then the struggle starts. And the important thing here in terms of the verse is that now the bull takes this little boy on up to the highest mountain and through the lowest ravine. Takes that little boy everywhere. Also for me, it's like that. This practice will, though it's very simple, will drag us through all the different emotions that we have and will meet all sorts of aspects of ourselves and all sorts of aspects of what it is to be human if we continue with this practice. So, this one also, that was 4 and 5. This one is catching and taming. So here he's taming the bull. And then my favorite, and probably everybody's favorite, because it's the most commonly seen one. This one here. Seen that one, maybe. At the Bodhimanda Zen Center, this is the rug in front of the Zendo. It's like a place where you wipe your feet on this very image. Or another way to look at it, just look down as you bow. Okay, that's the point of this practice. That's riding home. And they're the boy and the bull, they're friends, you see. And they know each other deeply. And I've often said that a model I have for my life is that my no-self aspect and my self aspect know each other and trust each other. That I can give over the lead very easily. I don't have to think all the time. I can go give up the lead to my no-self aspect freely, happily, and then take it back without a bunch of conflict, without a bunch of... easy relations between those two. Again, one taking the lead and then the other. And it says here that music is everywhere. My flute, the verse, my flute intones through the evening, measuring the handbeats, the pulsating harmony. I direct the endless rhythm. The little boy does. What is that rhythm? So I want to have a little aside here about rhythm, about what that rhythm is. The rhythm of everything. And the rhythm, according to the way I was taught, is the rhythm of self and no self, of relative and absolute, of human's world and God's world, over and over and over. And it's that rhythm. They say direct the rhythm. We have to comport with rhythm, and then we can move it. We can work with it. We have to understand the rhythm, hear it. Rhythm is created by a steady combination of opposites. The definition that I read, one definition I read on Wikipedia says, it's a regular succession of opposites. The Greek root word is the roots are recurring motion and symmetry. So it has this on-off quality, which is to say that opposites come together. Opposites work together. Boom, boom. Beat. Silence, beat, silence. And there's so much of that in Zen practice, by the way, in the form of Zen. Boop, 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 boop. Yoga, everybody's favorite. Gong, ji. The rhythm of walking, the rhythm of the drum. And opposites are regularly invoked in Zen and Buddhism. You'll see them everywhere if you start looking. That confused me for a long while, and I'm going to clear up that confusion right now. Once and for all, for everybody. So it's taken me many years of practice for this. This is just a hack. This is the way I understand it anyway. The first set of opposites that we talk about are the regular everyday sets of opposites. And my teacher, Sasaki Roshi, talked about opposites all day long. Plus and minus. The opposites of happiness and sadness, what I like and what I don't like, greed and fear, good and bad. In our first picture, remember. And our job, our first job in Zen, is to, one way to look at this present moment awareness is, guess what, it's not just dropping your story, it's dropping all those opposites. Dropping what I like and what I don't like. Dropping what the Buddha said, he said it over and over again, aversion and attraction. Moving away from something, moving towards something. That set of opposites is key. We have to drop that in order to find this present moment. So when we do, then we discover this bowl. We discover this place that's beyond opposites, this place that is just present. And by the way, when we do this over and over again, our relationship to those opposites changes and mellows, and they become less polarized and less fixed on their poles. And we understand more fully sort of their place in our lives. And one way I sometimes put it is we become larger and include those opposites. Okay, all that was a little in parentheses. The second higher order of opposites. So the first one is these everyday opposites. especially aversion and attraction. Second is the bull and his rider. The second is this self and no self, relative and absolute. You can't even find the bull without giving up that other set of opposites. But once you do, the world becomes not just about aversion and attraction, but there is this other set of opposites which appear, which is yourself and no self, which is God's world and human's world, the world the world of the absolute and the world of the relative. And so this rhythm, you see, is not the rhythm of good and evil. It's the rhythm of absolute and relative. And I say that because, my son, I checked with him to make sure this was okay to say. He picked a senior quote yesterday, deadline for the senior quote. And it was by somebody I'd never heard of, and here it is. Duct tape is like the Force. It has a dark side and a light side, and it holds the universe together. It's perfect for him, you know, Star Wars reference and duct tape. Yeah. So, my pick with Star Wars is that even though George Lucas worked with Joseph Campbell, who I love, to kind of, you know, talk about the new mythology, is that the light and the dark side too often are depicted as good and evil. It just sort of, it goes that way. It's very Hollywood now, and it's all about those are the two sides. Instead of the higher order opposites of self-abnegation and selfhood. So I think the true set of opposites is sung by Leonard Cohen. Okay, you have to really try to grab this. I love this song. It's called The Window. I won't sing it, but I'll read it. This is the last part of it. For the Holy One dreams of a letter. Dreams of a letter's death. Letter being the world of words. Dreams of a letter's death. The Holy One. Oh, bless the continuous stutter of the Word being made into flesh. It's a beautiful song. It's about this woman or a person who's staring out the window and not sure what to do with her life. And in the end, you know, the idea is to throw yourself into the fire and understand this last thing. Oh, bless the continuous stutter of the Word being made into flesh. That is to say, the Word, God, being made into flesh, human form. That's the continuous stutter of everything. Is the world of the absolute and the world of the relative. God's world and our world, back and forth. So to understand that, and Leonard, you know, was in this song, you know, was very clearly in my mind, you know, influenced by his practice. Okay, that's almost all I want to say about rhythm. It's going to come up right at the end. But the next thing after you get to know this, you really get familiar with this bull and get to move back and forth with it, this is the next one called Transcending, the Bull Transcended. Yeah. And here there's no bull in the picture. He's just back home. And he is sitting in the moonlight there. No thought of bull. And the next one is the bull and the self transcended. Don't remember that. It looks familiar. One of our favorite images there. These two, from my point of view, are the... So the... What do you call that? The falling action. But it's where the boy is getting deeply intimate with what all this means. He hasn't just found this no self, but he's really understanding now, deeper and deeper, what it means and identifying with it. Identifying himself. And this is a stage that I'm working with, and I hope everybody works with. I'm certainly very much a work in progress, but with identifying with that aspect. Really feeling like it's as much you as you. And then, number nine, reaching the source here. And because of the verse, I like calling it being born from the source. Where, again, trees and birds and in the verse it says, you know, red, the water is emerald, the mountain is indigo. We're back to, there's an old Zen phrase, before practice, mountains are mountains, rivers are rivers. After a little while, mountains are not mountains, rivers are not rivers. That's the empty circle work. And then, again, mountains are mountains, rivers are rivers. But they're changed. Your perception of them has changed because of the work that you've done in between. So that's my interpretation of reaching the source. And then the last one, another favorite here. This one is returning to the marketplace, I think. That's what they call it here. In the world, even better. In the world, there's our... Oh, this is our little boy here on this side. Yeah, not here. This is somebody else. This is our guy here. So he's gained a few pounds. And but he's happy. You see him? He's happy. And this one here is the denouement. This is the resolution in the story. He's all grown up now. And he walks around the marketplace giving gifts and helping the world. And he says he's blissful. My interpretation is he's integrated this fully now. And he has... Yeah, he walks around. He's returned to the world and is giving gifts to this little guy and helping the world. And I think he has, you know, that the falling, the going down to zero. There, he had to learn to lose himself completely. He had to lose his greed and fear completely. You know those old stories with the dragon? The dragon was always curled up around treasure. He represents, I've read, greed. And so you have to kill that dragon in order, and what you're doing is killing your own greed and your own fear in order to do that. So that's the kind of going down to zero and then coming back up, born anew. And you come back to the world, and in the world of mythology, and Joseph Campbell's anyway, you bring back this ultimate boon, B-O-O-N, this gift to society. And that's what he does by walking around and helping others. And this, I think, is actually a third set of opposites. And that is an integrated self, which he has here, versus a not yet integrated self. So that's the final stage. He's big. You know, he's got a big belly. It includes everything. Light and dark, no self and self, joy and sorrow. And he's bringing this knowledge to the world and mixing with the world in a very common way. He says he's been to the wine shop. He's a person of the people, and he meets everybody. He doesn't turn anybody away. He meets all the people of the world. And I think... Look at this. He's passing something to this kid. And who does that kid look like? To me, it looks like that number one, the little boy in the first one. He's giving something to that little boy for his journey through this thing, you see. So the whole circle continues. And from my point of view, I don't have the cover page. Oh, well. This whole thing is a circle, you know, and it's maybe the direction of our lives, but it also is every time we do a retreat, we go through the same thing of looking and getting jerked around and finding and then coming back to the world and, you know, integrating and coming back to the world. And we even do it every time we sit as well. So that's my story. And just for now, I'm sticking with it. But I do think it's important to draw, circling back to the beginning, we do have to, over and over again, drop our story. All stories. And not hold super tight to this one either. But then come back to these stories that can help, I think, if we interpret them for ourselves and as I have just done from that's my perspective on this story. So I hope it's one that helps you in your journey as well.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.